make the magic happen.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. We are live at Convergence 2015. I am your host, Tim Wick, joined as always by my fabulous and somewhat hungover co-hosts, Molly Glover.
True.
And Nick Glover.
Half true.
The somewhat part, is that the half that's not
it's
true?
It's because he's drunk.
No, yes, right. That is... Yeah,
just a little
bit. It's kind of a race between the alcohol and the caffeine right now.
It's our 10 tequila anniversary weekend, so we're drinking tequila all weekend.
They're not kidding about that. So we're joined by our fabulous guest. She's also a guest of honor, Convergence 2015, Jennifer Ouellette. Jennifer, thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah. Now, Jennifer, before we go into the actual topic, why don't you let people know? You've written several books, and why don't you let them know about those and where they can find them?
Well, you can find them where all fine books are sold, which probably means Amazon for most of you. I'm the writer of author of four popular science books. One is called Me, Myself, and Why, Searching for the Science of Self. That's the most recent. I've also written a book called The Calculus Diaries, How Math Can Help You Lose Weight, Win in Vegas, and Survive a Zombie Apocalypse. most relevant to this convention, The Physics of the Buffyverse. And then I had my first book was called Black Bodies and Quantum Cats, Tales from the Annals of Physics, where I basically looked at physics history and concepts and tied them in with pop culture. And you can also, I have a blog at Scientific American called Cocktail Party Physics. You're welcome to read that too.
Awesome. I was going to ask you about the blog, and now I don't have to. So that's one less thing I have to remember to do. So, Jennifer, when we were talking about a topic for this panel, what you brought up is that you were raised an evangelical Christian.
Yes,
which
I was.
We thought we wanted to know about that.
Yeah.
How did that work? How was that for you?
You know, it's look, when you're raised with it, you think it's normal, right?
Right.
I mean, this is the worldview. This is what the people around you do. But, you know, it's interesting. I'm an adopted, and one of the reasons that I wrote the self book was I was curious as to how much of various things were nature versus nurture, and one of those was belief versus unbelief. I didn't actually find an answer to that in the book, in case you're wondering, because I was just this little innate person who just didn't get it. I don't know why, out of all the people in my family, I'm the one that the religion didn't take, despite the fact that I grew up with it just along with everybody else. Partly because I think I read voraciously. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I read was a children's encyclopedia on mythology from around the world.
I think I had that.
Yeah, probably the same one.
Yeah.
I think we've had a couple people mention that. Just
yeah,
that.
And just... So you start to see stories about gods through the ages from around the world, and you start to see the similarities, and you start to ask yourself the obvious question, why my god and not one of these? Because frankly, you know, Thor's way cooler.
Yeah.
And hotter.
Yeah. And hotter. You know?
So much hotter.
That became an issue later in life when I hit puberty. but, you know, I grew up, you know, 8 years old, 10 years old. My mother, they have been Catholic, and she lost her best friend in a drunk driving accident. And I think that she turned to this for answers, for solace. And I was fascinated, and I, you know, by the whole thing. And I remember going with her to prayer meetings, and she didn't just do it small. It wasn't just like, oh, now I'm going to believe in God a little bit more. She went full on Pentecostal, speaking in tongues, healed in the spirit, you know, all those sorts of things. When I was 12, we had someone perform an exorcism in our house because one of my cousins became convinced that the demon was haunting one of the rooms.
What made your mother leave Catholicism, do you think? Like, specifically, I mean...
You know, it's interesting. There's a very strong... In certain branches of evangelical Christianity, there's a very strong anti-Catholic stance.
Yeah,
for sure.
And she just bought into that. And she decided that, you know, Catholicism wasn't the way, and the Catholic Church had not given her the answers that she wanted to hear, I think, is what it came down to.
Their brand of magic wasn't working. She had to upgrade to some extra crazy magic.
Although she said that she did miss the rituals. She missed it. She missed the trappings very, very much.
The bells and smells is one friend of mine.
The bells and smells. Yeah. She absolutely liked the bells and smells. And I remember her taking me to... one of these prayer meetings where, you know, it wasn't just enough for me to say the little sinner's prayer and ask Jesus to become my personal savior. I actually had to be baptized in the Holy Spirit and speak in tongues, which is a terrifying. I was a very shy child, and you know, for someone like me who's already a reader and kind of literal, you know, very pragmatic oriented, I went to this prayer meeting, and there are kids who are like 5 years old walking around babbling, you know, in this these things, and the priest laid his hands on me, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. I was terrified. I was shy. I was anxious, and I mostly just wanted to kick him in the shin so he would leave me alone. To me, that just tells me that, you know, it was never for me, and it took me many, many years to come to that conclusion. Because there's a process, right, that has to take place. Sure. It's not like Saul on the road to Tarsus where you suddenly have this moment of deconversion. No. It's a slow, gradual weakening because it's not just your personal belief, it's your community mm-hmm. that you end up having to give up.
Well, there's a reason that you know, I mean, questioning is kind of the opposite of faith in that sense. And that's, you know, as you start questioning things and as you start asking questions and getting unsatisfactory answers like God's will and know your friends are going to hell because they were born Jews and things like that. But you're like, that doesn't make sense. And then you move on. Well, it does weaken it slowly.
Well, it also gets even worse because when they see you start to question, they really do bring a tremendous amount of pressure on you.
Yes.
And I don't think anyone who has not grown up in that house, in that environment, really understands, because it's very subtle psychological pressure. Mm-hmm. And you're not allowed to ask those questions. You are called, you know, well, you know, you're sinning by doubting, and we're going to pray for you. Yeah. And it got really bad in college. I went to a Christian college, and and this is the thing. I was someone who actually believed in asking questions. I wanted to hear other viewpoints, and that was not something that was acceptable. Mm-hmm. And they pushed back hard. My college years, particularly my senior year in college, were not good in that respect.
They don't have all the answers, because I mean, like, no one has all the answers, and so if you're questioning. And they don't have a hard, you know, answer for you or a satisfactory answer for you. That self-doubt, it can be contagious. People will lock it down in other people because they don't want to think about it. They don't want to muddle their own, you know, they're so happy to be believing what they believe and not have any holes poked in that.
Well, it's so convenient that questioning's a sin.
Yeah.
No, it's so convenient.
But there's a whole story in the Bible, the story of doubting Thomas. You know, blessed mm-hmm. are they who do not see and yet still believe. And that is actually a mantra of the evangelical movement for many, many reasons, in part because it alleviates the cognitive dissonance that's going to inevitably set in when you feel a core belief is attacked.
Right.
So I understand that the more dependent on the questioner, dependent on what they feel is being attacked, will determine the severity of how hard they push back.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume that your family is aware of your beliefs.
Yes,
now.
I'm actually married to a very outspoken atheist, Sean Carroll. So
so you can't help it. You can't
they love
it.
Sean. They're very sad he's going to hell, but they love
well,
him.
Yeah. That sounds familiar.
Yeah. So do you still get pushback with your family now? Are there awkward situations with your family now? Or is it kind of an uneasy truce?
Yeah, you and I talked a little bit about this yesterday, and I'm happy to share this, even though it's a little painful. For a long time, I think that there was this uneasy truce. They're just things that you sweep under the rug. Because this is my family, and I want you all to understand that I love these people. These are people who are good to me. They raised me. They did wonderful things. You know, yes, they, you know, that we had tensions, you know, in terms of beliefs and things. But generally, we avoided it. We focused on the fact that we did have some things in common, and that common thing was our mutual love for each other, and that we had all grown up together.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain situations that transpire where you realize how you view the world really does matter, and that happened this past year. My beloved older brother was diagnosed with stage 4 stomach cancer that had spread, and he was essentially given 3 to 6 months to live. And I think that it is safe to say that the atheists handled it much, much better than the Christians. And that should be surprising, because you know, I was willing to accept that my brother was dying and would die and I would never, ever see him again, and everything that my brother was would be gone. A much more brutal outlook, I think, than my parents.
A harsher reality.
A much harsher reality. But one that my spiritual but non-religious brother was more than willing to accept. Hmm. And my folks opted for utter denial, and it was terrifying. Hmm. And it caused a lot of problems. They decided that they had to believe that Jesus was going to heal him, and that allowing any actual honest talk about the realities of his situation and what he was going through would be not believing hard enough.
Oh.
And we were not allowed to talk about it. If we tried to bring it up to prepare them, as he got worse and worse and closer to closer, my mother would actually hang up the phone.
So any attempt to deal with it in a healthy way is heretical.
You were not allowed to admit the possibility that he might die.
And
I cannot tell you how painful that was for me and how hurt my brother was in his final days.
Of course.
He was scared. He was suffering. And they wouldn't talk to, he couldn't talk to them about it. And they would say things like, this is happening, you know, God has a reason and this is part of his plan. And it was extremely hurtful to him that they would think that his extreme suffering would be at all part of any divine plan.
Oh.
And
so,
especially the divine plan of somebody, something that's supposed to be loving and caring.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and what he wanted from them was love and support and someone to hold his hand, because he was freaking terrified.
Our friend, Carr Hagerman, friend of the show, Carr Hagerman, was on, and he was talking about being in the room with his mother when she was dying, and talking about how to him as a non-believer, that moment to him was just him and her in that room, and there wasn't an afterlife, and there it was, this is our final moments together, and how that was a really big deal to him, and how that was very beneficial to him in dealing. You know, so as much as you talk about the really nihilistic view of, I'm never going to see this person again, you as an atheist, I think there's a recognition of that makes every minute from now until they're gone so much more important.
Needless to say, I dropped everything for 2 months and went up to Seattle. Right.
Do you feel like it affected your parents' faith at all that they prayed to Jesus to heal your brother and then it didn't happen?
No, I mean, it was a huge, because for them it's a test of faith.
So you have to pray to Jesus to heal him, and then when it doesn't happen, you just say, well, I guess I didn't believe enough. I wasn't faithful.
This is a common psychological thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, people rationalize it after the fact. You know, when people claim that the rapture is going to happen on this date and this time, and then it doesn't, well, you know, it was a test.
Sure.
You know, they never, ever walk it back.
Oh, I can't
and I don't
even.
I don't really care about that. They're never ever going to change their beliefs, and I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it really was the only time that I realized that, wow, this actually is a serious, you know, rift. It took me a long time, actually. It took me several weeks to stop being angry. And that's hard, you know, it's hard for me to admit. And among other things, David very, very specifically did not want them praying over him.
Oh.
And because he had the same scars I did growing up in his household,
sure.
Even though he was, you know, not an atheist per se, he was also not very pronouncedly not religious. And they waited till he was unconscious and did it. And I was not there.
Disrespectful.
And I was not there. And I had to go away, and then I came back after. And my sister just said, "Well, we knew he didn't want to, but we knew that if we didn't let them, we would start World War III. What would you have done?" And I said, "I would have started World War III."
Yeah.
Since when do their needs trump the person who's dying? And, you know, in the end, everybody rationalized it. He didn't know. He was unconscious. What does it matter?
What does it hurt? I hate that. What does it hurt?
But, you know, and there's some truth to that. It was just disrespectful.
Exactly. That's what it hurts.
It hurt me more than anything, and that's why I was so angry. It hurt me that you know, he didn't get anything he wanted.
It's part of that, I think, that belief of the saying that funerals are for the living and they're not for the dead.
Yes.
You know, and
he didn't want a funeral, and I can understand why.
Right, absolutely. It's morbid. All I want is keening. Like, the rest is up to everyone else.
As long as there's
some good wailing, and like someone has to throw themselves on my casket at least once, and then we're golden. On one hand, it's like, it's disrespectful, and it's not acknowledging his wishes or beliefs or you know, lack thereof, or however you want to qualify that. And obviously you
I've got. I told my husband he's going to get a restraining order if I'm dying.
Yeah, right. But at the same time, like the other hand, like the compassionate part of me wants to be like, it wasn't for him. It was for them.
It was.
If that helps them take comfort in losing a son, then it's like the most asshole-ish way to.
Yeah.
I had, it's like,
I mean, I say it. I did. We did work past it, mm-hmm. but there was probably a couple months there where I didn't call my mother quite as frequently because I just needed some space.
Yeah.
I mean, you do have to understand we're all in tremendous pain, and so all these things are just it's heightened emotions all around, including me. And you have to bear that in mind. And if you're a rational person, as we all are here, you're going to realize that a lot of that anger stems from grief.
Yeah.
And, you know, when he finally died, everybody's crying equally.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like we're all hugging and crying. We all share this tremendous loss. And we just, what made me sad is after we left the hospice, after he's passed and they're going to do with the body what they're going to do, you would think that everybody would come together and grieve. But because of these profound differences, we basically all went to our separate corners. And that was tremendously sad to me.
Mm. How old were you when you really started expressing your doubt and faith and your, maybe at the time, agnosticism or however you were phrasing
it? I didn't know there was a word for it.
Yeah.
That's so common. We talk about that so much. Not knowing there's a word for it.
I didn't even know atheists exist. All I knew is that...
Well, I knew atheists existed, but I didn't think that's what I was because I was told that they were like, you know, Satanists.
Yeah.
I mean, you've all heard how atheists get spoken of because none of them have actually met an atheist.
We eat babies,
So, I clearly wasn't that.
Were you a teenager?
I was probably a teenager, and I think that's quite normal.
Do you feel like your parents maybe still see it as some sort of teenage rebellion that's just lasted well into adulthood?
You know, I think they were kind of hoping that losing my brother would push me.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, and of course the exact opposite happened. I mean, I'm really confident and firm in my lack of belief at this point in a way that I wouldn't have been, I think, in high school or college. For a long time, I did call myself an agnostic. Mm-hmm. And it just took it's a process, right?
Yeah.
But I think that when I look back, I just don't have the temperament for it, and I never did. And I was always sort of the person who asked questions or who would go to these weird prayer meetings where people were being slain in the spirit, and it would be a little scary and weird, and I was interested in that respect, but I didn't want to participate, and I didn't think it had anything to do with me.
Yeah.
But you don't start voicing that until you get to high school and college.
Certainly not. I mean, you just don't even have I don't think you have the cognitive tools. I don't think you have the brain biology to be able to think. I mean, there's a reason that we have the age of reason, as it were, and it's in your teens. I mean, it's because you just aren't equipped to be anti-authoritarian in that way, which is what it is, especially in your situation.
Yeah, there's that natural pull away from your parents and recognizing them as flawed, and with that comes any... ideologies or anything, any beliefs that they have, those come into question as well, because your parents aren't perfect. That means they're flawed. That means what they believe could be wrong.
Yes.
And then, you know, with that comes a whole world of options.
Yeah, and I will say that I love my parents very much.
Sure.
I really do. But this is, you know, this is a very intense kind of experience that really puts any family dynamic under strain.
Oh, yeah.
And if you have significant differences in worldview and religious belief, it's going to be bad.
I think one of the hardest truths to accept as an adult is it's possible and often likely to love someone with all your heart and not always like them very much.
Yes, exactly. I was just about to make that point.
And honestly, and just to be like, because when you're a kid, it seems like those are the same.
Yeah.
And to realize that, like, I really love you. I wish I didn't. I mean, I do, but boy, you're an asshole. And I just don't, but I can't help it. You know, you're my uncle or whatever, and there you are.
And bear in mind that the same people who do horrible things in the name of Christ also do good things in the name of human nature. You know, that my parents can be generous and they can be horrible.
Yeah.
As can I.
Yes. Yeah,
we're humans.
Sure.
We're frail.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's part of the best.
All right. You know what? This is about the perfect time. Sounds like we kind of ran into a lull there. And I think it's probably time to start working on our five questions.
Yay.
So, Jennifer, this is actually...
now that I brought you all down.
Yeah. Thank you. That was very depressing on our comedy podcast. Let's
Oh, my God. It's a comedy podcast?
Not anymore. Hey, well, you know, that's all right.
We record an alternate intro theme song where Jeffrey is just crying while playing the guitar.
I pulled a Game of Thrones on you all.
Oh, that's so sad. No, it's all right. We can make up for it in the five questions. So, all Jennifer, right. this is super special because you are going to be the last guest on our podcast to answer our original five questions. We debuted these on our first podcast here at Convergence 3 years ago, and we decided it's time for a change. We decided it's time to try something new, but not before you get to try something old. So it's almost like a wedding because there's blue tape on the floor. And
no. Oh.
And
hold
also
on.
It's awkward.
I'll borrow this. All right.
All right.
Now we're good.
Molly just borrowed.
Something borrowed.
Borrowed some tequila. So it is like.
Yours is better.
All right. Yeah, that's because I made this one.
All right. So, Molly, why don't you start us off with question number one?
Question number one. What is the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days, new or old?
Interesting. We've been binge watching a lot of TV shows, but we did actually watch this really cool Iranian vampire film called A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
I've heard of that. Oh, it's
was
fabulous.
It good? If you liked Let the Right One In.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's shades of that.
Ooh, interesting.
And it's extremely well done and absolutely adored it. So I'd say that definitely, even though I loved Kingsman a lot, you know,
sure.
No. For just the sheer silliness of it.
Kingsman is crazy fun.
You know, it's just crazy, crazy fun. I think that, you know, just in terms of just sheer power that sticks with you long after you see it, that's a good, great
is it
book.
Is it horror? Like, is it scary or suspense?
It
or?
Is. It if you saw Let the White Right One In, it's along those sorts of things. Oof. I mean, there's a horror aspect to it, but it's more sinister.
Excellent.
Okay. And is it streaming right now? When you watch it, was it streaming?
It is definitely streaming.
Where?
I think Netflix.
Netflix, cool. Okay. So check that out. Nick, question number two.
Who is your favorite atheist character?
I take it this is like film and television.
Well,
anything you want.
We've had people say, "Well, P.Z. Myers is quite a character," and you know, like damn him. Like, you know, it's
yeah.
Open
if I'm
to
going real life, I say my husband because he's a wonderful atheist. But if I'm going TV, I love Gregory House. I thought that was just a fantastic thing. And one of my favorite episodes was when they had the episode with the magician who they couldn't figure out what was wrong with him, and House wants to know the trick. And he says, "No, the magic lies in not knowing." And he goes, "There's no such thing as magic, as an oxymoron." But his whole point being, it's way better to know. And I just love that they made that a plot point. And they had this ongoing debate between magic and secrecy and make keeping it, you know, mystical, and the scientist and the doctor who wants to know the truth. And I just love that dynamic.
I would love if that led to, like, a Supreme Court decision determining whether or not HIPAA protects like a magician's trademark tricks.
Just as an interesting point of trivia, Rebecca Watson, who's here with us today, when we asked her this question, one of the first people to be asked this question, her answer was Gregory House.
It was House. Yeah.
And then she changed her mind to something else. And I
said, no, he's an asshole. Never mind.
Yeah. Well, he is an asshole, but that's okay.
That's all right. Question number three. What is your geekiest hobby?
You know, I play a lot of like computer Scrabble and poker and things like that, but I would say, you know, and I do martial arts, or I used to do martial arts, and
ooh.
it's interesting because my interest in science kind of melded very well with the martial arts. I ended up having a whole chapter in the physics of the Buffyverse on the physics of the fight, martial arts. But you can tell that I'm a geek because one of my instructors was a dental student when I was just starting out in the martial arts, and I was having trouble with one of the arm bars. And says, "You know what? We're doing our human anatomy dissections right now. Why don't you just come like to the lab after hours and we'll practice on some of the cadavers?"
Oh.
And he said, and we became fast friends. He goes, "I knew you were like a hardcore geek because you said sure."
That's awesome. And like
because when you do dentistry,
awesome.
This is what I learned in dentistry. The nerves actually go all the way down the arm, so they actually open up the entire upper body.
Mm-hmm.
So they're perfect for practicing arm bars. You can actually see all the tendons and nerves while you're doing it, and it's all opened up.
Oh,
and it really did make a difference. I have killer arm bars now.
Wow.
Watch out.
Literally.
Killer arm bars. All right. Molly, question number four.
Question four is, what is your favorite sandwich?
Yeah, I'm boring on this. You know, my husband teases me because he likes building these really elaborate sandwiches, and I like, you know, a nice, really rich multigrain bread with smoked turkey piled high and some hummus and a bit of lettuce, and that's all I want.
That sounds good.
I don't want any fancy stuff. I want the purity of the ingredients to come through.
I like that you add the lettuce for a little bit of color. That's good.
Yeah. Otherwise, a little bit of crunch.
It's pretty beige.
Texture.
It's more of a texture thing.
Yeah.
I think hummus is a great, like, not mayonnaise, not mustard, not ketchup.
I hate mayonnaise. I like, do like it, a nice
yeah.
mustard.
Do you like Miracle Whip?
Hate it.
Oh,
well, it's all right. I'm with you.
It's all right. As long as you hate mayonnaise.
Yeah, as long as you also hates mayonnaise, then you're fine.
Then we're cool.
Hummus is underrated on sandwiches.
It is.
All right, a good question topic. Number five.
Question number five is, what is the stupidest thing or maybe most insulting thing anyone's ever said about your atheism?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, we all have the usual, oh, life must be so bleak and depressing for you, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. We all know the answer to that. But to me, you know, I did martial arts, and you form bonds with these people in the dojo over this shared love that you have of this sport. And you don't always talk about things like, what are your religious beliefs? And one of my good friends, she was one of the other women, only one of the few other women that were training with me that got a black belt. When I got married... or when I got engaged, she said, well, what church are you going to get married into? And I says, oh, well, you know, Sean's an atheist. And she went, oh, my God, doesn't that bother you? You know, and I says, you know I'm an atheist, right? And it just had not occurred to her. Mm-hmm. And I bring it up because, first of all, it was shocking to me that she was shocked. because clearly she had never met one before. But then, of course, I thought, well, this is probably good because now she's met an atheist that she knows really well. And she absolutely cannot demonize me, and it's going to shift her opinion.
She liked you first.
She liked me first. I'm actually a good person. She knew I was moral. She knew that I was all these things and had honor and character and all these things that she valued, and she could not dismiss me lightly.
That was one of the reasons why this year for our badge ribbons, we were kind of talking, we were throwing around maybe atheist or maybe, you know, non-believer or something like that. We settled on godless because we felt it was non-religiously inclusive.
Catch-all.
Kind of a catch-all. But it's important to be recognized and counted and you know, seen as like, oh, all these geeks that I you know, interact with at Convergence or ride the elevator with or are on panels with. Like, oh, they're an atheist. Cool, right on. Like, we share more in common than not, especially here.
Yeah. Atheist used to be one of those, like, you know, red flag words in the way that feminist has now become.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And, you know,
hopefully we'll have a day when geeks say, oh, yeah, you're a feminist, that's cool.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Dare to dream, people. Yeah.
Okay. I choose to believe that the rough patch we're in now is death throes of asshole thoughts that are on the way out.
I like that you're so optimistic, Nick. That's great.
I'm just going to sit here thinking
really
asshole
sweet.
Thoughts.
All right, so Jennifer Ouellette, thank you so much for joining us on Geeks Without God. Once again, where can folks find your blog?
You can find it at Scientific American. It's called Cocktail Party Physics.
Cocktail
and you can find
physics.
Me online on Twitter at Jean-Luc Picant.
Oh, see, that's nerdy. I like that. All right, so for those of you listening in, we hope you enjoyed the episode. Feel free to comment. Talk to us about your experiences growing up in religion and experiences with your family since then. We're always interested to hear that stuff. Of course, we always encourage you to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and, of course, review us on Ye Old iTunes. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll catch you next time. Bye.
Thanks to Tim Wick and Jeffrey Brown for our theme song, Geeks Without God.
We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and look at past podcasts at www.geekswithoutgod.com. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God.
We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
I had no idea you were a comedy show.